Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind, and greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Thank you very much.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.
Even a much-hyped giant gorilla, a geisha, and a schoolboy magician won't be able to create a happy ending at the U.S. box office as Hollywood ends its most disappointing year in nearly two decades. Plunging movie ticket sales after a string of uninspiring remakes and movie sequels coupled with an explosion of the DVD and video game markets are keeping audiences at home and have sent Hollywood into a deep existential crisis. Ticket sale revenues dropped 5% in the first 11 months of 2005, while the number of Americans going to the cinema fell by 6.2% compared to the same period in 2004. The result is Tinseltown's most disappointing box office performance in 15 years, as audiences dazzled by their entertainment choices and disappointed by the mediocre films on offer turned away from the cinema in droves. In droves they were turned away.
Droves.
Well, welcome to the Hollywood Saloon. I am Andy, and with me, of course, is the human film database, John Jansen.
Welcome, 2006.
2006. Welcome to 2006. I guess this is episode 15 now.
15.
Sorry we were away for a while. We just dropped that big, massive pile of David Fincher on everybody and got great response from that. So took a little holiday break. And the cool thing was that John was doing basically a trip around the country. I mean, you were on a tour of the country, seeing the family. Over
it was the
holidays.
The Family Values Tour, for sure.
The Family Values Tour. But it was great because he stopped off in Houston, and we got a chance to, for the first time in 2 years, go to a movie together.
Strap on them guns.
We got those our gunslinger guns on, and we went and saw a little Peter Jackson Kong epic there together. I guess we saw that on that Thursday. But, but anyways, you know, it was no question whether or not we were going to see King Kong. I mean, everyone was going to see King Kong. But we went ahead and saw it like the second day, and you know there was all the hype going on. Oh, this is going to be great! This is going to be the big thing, and everyone's got all these big, massive expectations. And you know, here's Peter Jackson, just fresh off Lord of the Rings trilogy, which is you know one of the biggest money-making trilogies in the history of cinema. And King Kong cost what, $207 million. All these expectations, and then and the media is playing on it too beforehand, saying, you know, this could be the next Titanic and all that, and this is the thing that really inspired this episode, Apocalypse Hollywood 2, is you go to the Drudge Report, you go to the internet websites, and what do you see? Kong bomb.
Kong bomb.
Kong bomb? Question mark.
Kong bomb.
Kong bomb.
Kong bomb.
Okay. Now,
I mean, this is day one, Wednesday that it opened. Drudge hit that headline, and it wasn't even in. They didn't even give time for the final receipts of the day to come in, and they already had that headline up.
I know they already marked it Kong bomb. Straight off, and you know, I usually
because it didn't do what 50 million its opening day. I mean, this was the same website that said it was going to surpass Titanic just a few weeks earlier, right?
Right.
I mean, it just seems like the same information's coming from the same sources, and they're all bad.
Well, see, and that's what we have to say, is that what are these expectations that we're looking at?
And where's the research, and who's writing this stuff and coming up with it, and what makes their assumptions correct?
Right.
I mean, now that we have to listen to the wisdom of the Drudge Report, or their reporting on what's a hit and not a hit in Hollywood, and what's considered a bomb and a flop, I mean, I don't get it. And he's linking to a story, or he's writing it himself. I can't remember. Did he write that one himself?
Yeah, I don't remember. Okay. Well, I think what he did was he just went over to Box Office Mojo, pulled up the numbers, and said, you know, hey, you know,
right.
if $8 million is all it's going to make on day one, that's a little below expectations. And, you know, that may be true, but it doesn't, I mean, it's far from, you know, throwing the word bomb around.
Conga.
I mean, that's a pretty hefty thing, especially considering that that's
But he knows the effect it has, because his link is going to get picked up by 300 others.
Right.
You know? Suddenly that story is just going to travel around and be, you know, the Yahoo News story, and everyone else is going to pick it up, Associated Press, right. and so on. And you're having enough misinformation traveling around to where the first news becomes fact, and it's hard to recover from it.
Right.
In the early perception.
Let me read this article that was in the Hollywood Reporter by Greg Kilday here. It was came out on December 30th, and I thought it was fascinating. It's a little long, but I think it'll kind of get more to the point when we can dig even deeper into it. Studios have to battle snarky media reports. It's far too early to write any obituaries for Universal Pictures' King Kong. As of Tuesday, the end of its first 2 weeks in release, Peter Jackson's remake amassed $128 million domestically and $153.6 million abroad for a combined worldwide haul of $282.1 million. For those numbers, it's just about halfway home to recouping its $207 million production cost, give or take the added million spent on marketing as well as the participations earmarked for Jackson. Still, the fact that Kong didn't automatically prevail as King of the Jungle, but instead has found itself in a day-to-day battle with The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, has created its own suspense. One of the problems for Kong is that much of the media covers the box office battles with all the subtlety of color commentators at a demolition derby. In one holiday gathering this past week, when the conversations turned to movies, one friend mentioned that her sister said she wouldn't be going to see Kong. When he asked her why, her woman replied, "Because I read on Drudge that it was bombing." In fact, the always hyperventilating Drudge Report first responded to the early ecstatic reviews of Kong by reporting unrealistic expectations that could challenge Titanic as the biggest film of all time.
"This ship can't sink.
She's made of iron, sir. I assure you, she can't."
A feat that no movie has come anywhere close to since Titanic set sail in 1997. Then on December 16th, Drudge Report headlined the first reports of Kong's less than record-breaking first day with the ominous words, "King Bomb." Actually, I think it was Kong Bomb.
Kong Bomb.
Yeah, they have King Bomb here, but it was Kong Bomb.
Kong Bomb.
Because we walked into the theater saying, "Kong Bomb, Kong Bomb."
Right.
Now, if there's someone out there saying she doesn't plan to check out Kong simply because Drudge was erroneously hinting it was dead on arrival, it's quite possible that person never seriously intended to see the movie in the first place.
Whatever.
But the anecdote also suggests that in this media-saturated moment, Hollywood doesn't just have to worry about genuine word-of-mouth coming from moviegoers who actually attend a movie before spreading the word, good or bad. It also has to defend against secondary word-of-mouth based on little more than a half-baked opinion or a snarky headline. See, and that really says it. I mean, it's one thing when, you know, Joe down the street says, "Dude, don't see Kong, okay? It was whack. It was lame. I was bored, okay?" That's one thing. But, you know, here we are in the world of internet media news, and you're seeing this kind of activity. And, you know, and it wasn't just Drudge. I don't want to just tag Drudge repeatedly. It may have started there because he loves to start stuff, okay? But it filtered down. And when it starts it filtered down into Yahoo News, into MSN News, and all that kind of stuff, to where everywhere you went, you kept seeing headlines. You know what I mean? Kong in trouble, you know, Kong not king at the box office and all that kind of stuff. You know, and now, I mean, what are we, 3 weeks into Kong being out or something, and it's getting close to $200 million. I mean, okay, it's not the breakaway runaway hit like Star Wars was, you know, or Harry Potter was, but I think it's doing just fine. And, it may not be this, you know, ultra world explosion, but they're going to make their money and they're going to make a profit.
Well, and it seemed the angle so many of these articles were taking was, it's not opening as big as Return of the King. It's not as big as Return of the King. Almost as if it's supposed to be. Yeah. I mean, Return of the King was the third film in a series, and people were really anticipating it.
Right.
To the point to where they were watching the first two and then going to see the third film. Same thing with the Star Wars movie. Same thing for the Harry Potter movie. These are anticipated sequels. They're always going to open bigger than just the new guy coming in on the block, regardless of who's making it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is James Cameron's next film supposed to be the all-time highest grossing opening day ever? I mean, give me a break. I mean, these are just stupid expectations to put on any film.
Well, and I think that's part of the problem that we're talking about. When we talk about Apocalypse Hollywood, 2005 meltdown, and we are talking about the year, you know, the year in box office, the year in Hollywood, and all this crap that's going on, and it really just shows you it's a lot about expectations. You know what I mean? And a lot of what happened with the whole Kong Bong thing, and I think it points to the fact is, you know, when we talk about why there's all this media hype, and we touched about it on our episode 3, Apocalypse Hollywood, which you can go back and listen to in our archives.
Well, I agree again. We need to stop reporting the box office.
Right.
I'm sorry, Box Office Mojo. I'm sorry to all the people out there that like to use the numbers as a sporting event. It's just not helping the industry. And it's a game that's going to end up hurting films in the long run. Yeah, Narnia is doing great this run. Great. What happens when Prince Caspian comes out and it doesn't do as well as The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe did? Ooh, is Narnia in trouble?
Right, it's in trouble. Know, it's a bomb.
You could write the article today. It doesn't even matter,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's the kind of shortcut to thinking, I guess, you know, that goes into all of this type of reporting. You know, they just won't let things be, and they're not talking about the films. That's the biggest crime of all.
Remember when we talked to the other day and we said it's really a two-tier decision that people make before they go see a movie sometimes. And I'm not talking about the first weekend people. It's okay. Number one, they look for that thumbs up or thumbs down. You know, they're looking for that Ebert, Roper, you know, is this good or is this bad? You know, that's their one quick thing they're looking for.
Heaven forbid they should decide for themselves.
Exactly. Number two now, though, they are actually making a decision to go see a movie not on critical response, because if it was based on critical response, everyone would go see Kong, okay? But it's mm-hmm. based on, oh, no, I've heard that it's bombing. Are you kidding me? You know what I mean? I've heard that it's bombing. Okay, it's not making a lot of money. You know, no, see, that's the funny thing. It was never bombing. It has never been bombing. Kong or other films. It's just too early to tell day one. And I think that's the scary thing. Are we really, you know, it went to the point where it was like, okay, after a couple weeks, you can see that a film's not doing so good or living up to whatever this expectation was.
I think it's doing about as well as you could hope a 3-hour plus movie could be doing at the box office.
Exactly.
During the holiday season.
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that are moving against it. But, you know, it was 2 weeks before, and then it came down to just the weekend. And now, is it really going to come down to one day? Is that it? Are we really down to day one decision-making on film success?
It's sad.
I mean, if that's the situation, then we're screwed, because no films can live up to that unless they're just ultra, ultra special.
And hey, look, not everyone can go to the movies on Wednesday, people. Okay? Back right. off. Give me a chance to go see it. Start counting the numbers a week or two later, you know, when it actually matters.
Well, and there's perfectly good reasons why people would wait. And remember, we were sitting there talking about that in the theater before the movie started. Was we were saying, okay, why do people not come on day one? Well, number one, there's this anticipation of there's going to be so many people there. I'm going to wait till the crowd dies down. I've played that game before if it wasn't a movie that I just had to see immediately.
You got to remember, there's a lot of factors at play here at King Kong, and I don't know if these articles are really breaking it down or just using a shorthand or just using the box office, but, I mean, King Kong isn't exactly Jurassic Park. I mean, it's a well-known movie that's been made twice, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, certainly, you know, ripe for an update, but at the same time, it doesn't have the kind of same cross appeal as something that, you know, the Chronicles of Narnia is going to have. I mean, for a
right.
family...
Right.
You can take Grandma to Narnia.
Right.
But Grandma doesn't want to go see the King Kong movie.
Ah.
The 3-hour running time is going to be, you know, difficult for some audience members that would just rather wait.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, some people divide their time differently, and they just don't want to go spend a whole six-hour block of time to get ready to go to the movies, to go, to park, you know, to deal with, you know, getting your seat and mm-hmm. everything that goes mm-hmm. along with the experience. I mean, some people just don't have it, or they want to get around to it. And I think the fact that it drops so little by its second weekend shows you that, you know, people are still going to the film. They're getting around to it. But, I mean, if a family of four goes to the movies, that's $100.
Yeah.
Are they supposed to do that every week? You know, they might do it once a month, you know, so yeah. It's going to be a special film. I mean, right now, note to Universal, announced tomorrow, King Kong will not be on DVD till next November.
Right.
We're keeping it into the theaters till May. Thank you very much. We hope you go see it again.
It'll make its money.
You know, just keep the stinking DVD away.
Yeah,
and I know that there's going to be people out there that say, I'm insane.
You're insane!
But the DVD will do fine when you do eventually put it out. But give it its chance on the big screen, you know? Don't be so afraid that we got to run and just count on the DVD sales.
Well, and if ever you needed to see a movie on the big screen, this is the movie.
Well, anyone that complains about McMovies will find everything in this thing.
Right.
I mean, it's a big, long table of food, you know?
Absolutely.
every kind imaginable, all across and scattered.
Ooh, bacon.
You know, some of it tastes like it came out of a can, but boy, it tastes good.
We both enjoyed it big time. So if anyone wants to know how we felt about the movie, but I think the thing that detracted from the movie itself was that we caught ourselves talking more and more about this media deluge of crap that was going on around it. I mean, it's like, give me a break. Let's just let this movie be. You know, and you said a mouthful when you said, you know, let's hold off on that DVD release for a while. And you know, and we're not going to do a list this time like we did with Apocalypse Hollywood 1, you know, where we said, you know, here's five reasons why. I think everyone's down with those. We all know that DVD sales 4 months after the theatrical release is what's really driving people staying out of theaters. I know it is for me, you know.
Sure.
But if it's something big and special like Kong, I'm going to go to the theater. I want to see it there. You know, I'm not going to want to wait. But you really said it. It's like if they had the guts to say that, and it's been proven. It has been proven time and time again that you don't have to put a movie out 4 months after the fact for it to still have DVD sales later on in the year or 8 months later. You know, we talked about the Christmas movies that come out.
All of them, they always wait till the following Christmas.
You know,
Elf waited a full year before it hit DVD.
Well, because what kind of sense would it make to watch Elf in June or July? It would be stupid.
And it was a huge hit, Elf. 200 million hit, right? Did it hurt its DVD sales, the fact they waited a year? Or did it sell through the roof on DVD? Everybody that wanted Elf went out and got Elf, right?
That's right. Elf, so, Grinch Who Stole Christmas, Polar Express.
You know, I'm tired of this lame, it's just lazy thinking, oh, we want to make sure the public doesn't forget about it or they're aware of it. I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, if the internet wasn't around, I might buy that argument.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like 1980s type thinking.
Right.
No, they're going to remember it. You can't escape movies now if you just go on the internet. There's always going to be banner ads. There's always going to be ways to cross-promote and to keep your movie in the eye of people while they're waiting for the DVD to come out.
Right.
But it's... You can train the audience to go back to the theater.
Well, I mean, but that's the question. There's two sides of this coin, really. I mean, there's the studio side and there's the consumer side. And I completely agree with you 100% if you're looking out from the studio side. If they're really interested in fighting for this whole theatrical release, because you know there's a team of people that are ready to just thrash it and say, you know, let's move on with the future. Let's get on. Let's
if you allow
forward.
It to continue the way it's been continuing now, then I have to agree with you because it's going to eventually burn itself out. I can see the end near. If you want to keep it going for another decade and have it thrive and get people back in, you have to do the same thing that the Walmarts did. You got to come in and offer it at a cheaper price.
Well, but you know what?
$4 and $6. No higher prices than that.
But tell me, and this is what I don't understand, and maybe the accountants in Hollywood understand this. They've gone ahead and put the numbers out for us, okay? When I look at the numbers, and here's some numbers I collected, okay? In 2005, Hollywood made $8.9 billion. Now, from where I come from, that sounds like a decent amount of money. You know what I mean? $8.9 billion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We could start a war somewhere with that. Anyways, but in 2004, they made $9.4 billion, okay? Now, it was the lowest, and here's the thing that they griped about. It was the lowest yearly grosses since way, way, way back in 2001.
Now, is that grosses or attendance?
No, that's grosses. It says lowest attendance since 1997. But if money is money...
But 2004 was the record year. That was the highest year ever, right?
Right.
But we were supposed to break.
But why is it that if we had a record year in 2004... In 2004, we had what? Spider-Man 2.
The Passion.
Passion. We had big movies, okay? We had some big movies this year. Let's not forget. I mean, holy God, we had some big movies. But yet still, you know, we hear, and here's some things I pulled out of some articles. 2005, a flop. Hollywood suffered an off year. Is that true? I mean, maybe someone out there who is an accountant, who's in Hollywood, might know something like that and say, wait a minute, you guys are shooting low on this thing. And saying it really does make a difference when Hollywood doesn't make up to its previous year. But all these, you know, calls out of doom and gloom and you know, I read an article that even went as far as to say is that, you know, because of all this money that LA's future as a city is at stake. Okay, its financial future is at stake because, you know, because they're not making the money at the box office, it's driving up production costs. And, you know, they're cruising to Canada. They're cruising to Australia. But they're not staying in Hollywood. And
that's an industry issue, though. That is a complete industry issue.
Right.
Because there's films out there that have proven that you don't need $65.5 million, which is the average cost for a movie now,
right,
to make a movie. There's a system in place that has inflated itself.
Right.
And it's outpriced its product for today's marketplace. All of this movie money that they're missing in the box office, they're making up on DVD.
Right.
The people that have chosen not to go to the theaters anymore, that will wait 4 months, are buying DVDs. So
right.
That's a plus. That's not a negative. We've just shifted their interest from theatrical to DVD.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how do we get them back into theatrical if we want them?
Right.
And that's what nobody's really addressing, because
right.
They're going to get the DVD anyway. We've now... Movies have literally become what Richard Lester thought they would be in the early 60s. They've become like record albums,
mm-hmm.
you know. They're small. We throw them into our players. They're just like our CDs were.
Right.
And we consume them much in the same way. We stock them up. I mean, we have film libraries.
Right.
Now, we did that in the VHS age, but it took a while for VHS to be priced for collecting.
Right.
I mean, that didn't really happen until Batman in 89, when it went sell through the first time right out of the gate.
Yeah, there was none of this, you know, on Tuesday, you can go and get the latest movie for
$14.99,
yeah,
Wedding Crashers, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing. You know
Take
what I mean?
Take it home, you know?
I mean,
and get the unrated, unpopped, uncorked edition.
Exactly. See, that's the deal. If you're getting more than you did at the theater, I mean, really the only thing you're missing is A, the hassle, which is nice, B, the expensive concessions, C, a bunch of jerks talking around you and giving you grief and bringing babies into a movie.
Well, and you're you're talking about demographics, too. I mean, you and I are now reaching an age demographic that's going to the movies less,
mm-hmm.
but people 10 years younger than us are not facing those same issues.
Right.
So they're going to the movies because they want to go to movies. I mean, basically,
well, I think they want
like
it
going to the movies. That's why they go.
Well, I think,
but there's a lot of people that are not going, and you know, I think the writing's on the wall. Yes, home theaters are superb. Yes, the home
right.
theater experience can be just fine, equal if not better than some theatrical.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, over the holidays, I was over at my brother-in-law's house and my nephew's house. Zach, hey Zach, Zach's a big fan of the show, but. You know, he's got a 100-inch something screen on his wall with a projection with two subwoofers in there. And we were watching the extended cuts of Lord of the Rings. Okay? And why would I ever want to go to the movie theater again? You know,
mm-hmm.
I can pause it. I can get up. I can get my drink. I can do it. And you know what? Okay. So it's not a, you know, a wall-sized screen like you get in a theater. But I mean, honestly, you know, I completely understand why. This is happening.
Isn't it kind of like the people that buy the hardback, or do you wait for the paperback?
Right.
Are you a hardback reader, or are you a paperback reader?
Well, and I think that's really – I think it really comes down to this is, can you wait? You know what I mean?
Can you wait?
Can you wait? But see, remember we talked about this also in the first show, Apocalypse Hollywood, was that I think there's got to be a distinction there between people who don't want to wait, fanboys or whatever, you know, Star Wars, I'm there first day type of thing, or is this just teenagers out on a date and they walk up to the theater and they just play Russian roulette and go spin the wheel?
It's that also. I mean, going to the movies is a dating industry.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, I mean, people of all ages are going to the movies, you know.
Well, and it proves itself. I've heard stories. Was it you who told me, or was it someone else that told me they saw Syriana and there was teenagers in Syriana talking?
Dude.
That wasn't me.
Okay. Why do teenagers want to go to Syriana and talk?
Dude.
Well, Matt Damon was in it, so they kind of thought, oh, let's go see that. Maybe he kicks butt like he did in the Bourne movies.
Right.
You know? And then they realize, wait a second, no, this is not that movie.
This is not that movie.
Dude.
But, you know, I think that's the big question, is it can you wait? And I think that's, I don't know. It really depends on what it is you're talking about. You know, your Harry Potter fans are going to go. If they read the books, they're going to be there. It's you know, a big, huge party for them. Same with the Star Wars folks. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. War of the Worlds, it had a special, you know, I mean, it's aliens. It's huge. It's big. It's Spielberg. You know, people
it's
are going to.
It's summer. It's popcorn, you know.
It's popcorn. I mean, people are
going
to want to
go to
that.
There's usually at least one or two or three movies people like to earmark to try and go see during the summer as an activity.
Right.
Like going to the amusement park or going to a baseball game or mm-hmm. going to a concert, you know. Movies now, because of the way they've priced themselves, is almost that kind of special entertainment for some people. So
well,
they're going to be selective.
They are. I think that's, you know, and when you talk about guys like us in our late 30s, it's a different experience than the young kids going out and seeing a movie for fun.
But this whole scare tactic is just wrong, you know, to sort of sound the alarm bells. Oh, Hollywood's in trouble, you know. L.A. is going to be out of work, up in flames, floods coming. I mean, I don't even think that's responsible reporting, because it's not really getting to the heart of it. I mean, I am tired of domestic box office reporting.
Right.
That's a sliver of the pie. It's not the pie. A movie is a pie. Are you going to tell me you're only going to cut out like two pieces and call that the pie?
Right. I mean, why are films only judged on that?
I mean, in the 90s, movies have always made more money overseas than they do in America.
Right.
So, I mean, why are we not including that coin when we talk about a movie?
Well,
tell me Kingdom of Heaven was a failure.
Right.
Count up its total box office coin and then tell me how did it do based on the initial investment that went into it, plus prints and advertising.
Right.
I mean, it's the only way to talk about it if you're going to talk figures.
Right.
It's not even a fair horse race that they're putting these films into.
Well, and I don't understand why the American market is so pompous to think that it can only be judged in America. Like you said, certain movies do better in other countries, like Kingdom of Heaven and other films. You know what I mean? But, I mean, still, the way that they're talking about this year, how do you have the number one movie, you know, licking the heels of a $400 receipt, and you're saying failure? You know what I mean? Star Wars, $380 million. Harry Potter, $277 million. World of Worlds in third place, $234 million. Chronicles of Narnia, $225 million, and still making more. Same with Potter. Mm-hmm. Wedding Crashers, which was a complete surprise, coming in at five with $209 million. I've got the list here. Six, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, $206 million.
We have seen so many $200 million movies.
I know. Well, number seven, Batman Begins, $205 million. Number eight, Madagascar, $193 million. Number nine, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, $186 million. Number ten, Hitch, $177 million. What's the problem here? You know what I mean? You got top 10 movies, and you have seven films that grossed over $200 million, and two and possibly three that will eventually hit the $300 million mark. You know what I mean? Star Wars is at it, Harry Potter might hit it, and Narnia might hit it as well.
It's pretty impressive.
In the end. Is it really the numbers that are scary, or is it just the press causing a wave of fear?
We're just seeing a media that feels a need to do something, to report on something,
right?
Anything. doesn't even matter how accurate it is. I mean, somebody sounds an alarm and everybody else comes and, you know, instead of throwing water on it, they just throw more lighter fluid to see how it burns.
And I think that's the trick. I think it's really the question. Is Hollywood really in trouble, or is this just the media, you know, blowing things out of proportion? I mean, is this Hollywood Katrina? I mean, maybe we should call this show Hollywood Katrina. You know what I mean? Because, let me rephrase, Hollywood Rita. Because Rita was the one that came through Texas that everyone thought was going to be, you know, a freaking earthquake, explosion, everyone was going to die, you know, and people ran by the millions, you know? So, we could have called the show that, because I think that's really what we're looking at, is this media excitement and frenzy to destroy and to make drama where drama is not.
I mean, you brought up a good question. Should we save the theatrical business?
Okay.
And, I mean, coming from a studio point of view, and if I was to take their side, I mean, they're about to embark on what they've been waiting for 30 years, digital cinema.
Right.
I mean, they've been waiting to not have to make prints of movies. It's happening now. You know, Carmike Cinema is going to install 150,000 digital projectors. And that's the first step. I mean, there's going to be more that will follow.
Right.
And if they wanted to keep theatrical alive, within 5 to 7 years, it'll all be digital projectors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that will save tremendously on getting content into those theaters, all types of content. Whereas if you want to beam a boxing match or a pay-per-view event or anything, having a really nice theater is going to be a good business to be in, so you can get people in and beam whatever content you want. A revival film. If you want to show an episode of Lost, you could do it. You know, anything could come in through the content and be used. So the theater would almost be like a club venue, or just a venue to rent out and show whatever you want there that night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I do think people enjoy going out and attending those type of events. And I do think that there is a life for the theatrical, but if they continue on the methods they are now and just, you know, I mean, God, when we saw King Kong, remember that ad they had with all the Kong clips in it and they were trying to sell like a phone card or something?
Yeah, get
now,
the King Kong phone card.
I had not seen any clips from King Kong before going into the movie.
Uh-huh.
I was relatively, you know, fresh. And here comes this ad and I just wanted to close my eyes. I didn't want to see... Uh-huh. all the cool money shots before I saw the movie.
No.
I mean, they just sell as hard as they could.
Well, I think that's the deal. They're trying to suck every nickel that they can out of these films.
What they don't realize is there's a backlash to that.
Right.
Sometimes people will not participate in that type of consumerism if the ads bother them or it comes at an inconvenient time.
Well, you have to understand, it's really just another notch in the belt of why people don't go. From the consumer's perspective, you know, like I've said, if it's a hassle to get to the theater, and hey, forget it. Forget. I mean, there's issues we forget all the time. You know, my buddy Richard, who lives in Flagstaff, Arizona, hasn't been to the movies in 2 years. He loves movies. He's got a home theater that rocks. Okay, but he doesn't go to the movies because he's got 4 kids. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And not only do you have to pay for the movie and the concessions if you want them. And come on, you know, you want a soda, you want some candy, you want some popcorn, you want to have a good evening. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's like I've done those days where, you know, I'll go to the water fountain and drink as much water as I can before a movie or something, you know, and eat before I go in, you know, sneak in the box of Milk Duds in the bottom of my wife's purse or something, you know. But who wants that? You know, just have a good time, relax, don't have to think about it, go to the movie, get your concessions. But not only that, but he's got to pay for that babysitting. He's got to pay for the concessions, pay for the tickets. And then you walk in after you've done all this paying, and then you got to pay some more by watching the ridiculous commercials. And I know this is a little bit of a rant. But and then, off chance, somebody's talking. And you know that happens. And there's really nothing you can do about it except say, excuse me, please stop talking. And then they may get upset. Who knows what's going to happen? You know what
well,
I mean?
We need to make this very, very clear. The future of theatrical distribution comes with headphone jacks.
Absolutely.
In every single chair. The airlines did it, and it's time now the theaters do it.
Well, there has...
It'll cost money. Now, I mean, I'm sorry, but that is the only way we're going to completely sound out the noise of the and distraction from other patrons.
Well,
and, you know, really, I mean... it's a great way to get involved in the movie, too. You don't have any distractions when you have on headphones.
Well, and I think that that maybe really has to do with a lot with the viewer, too. Some people really are just kind of flighty. They don't really care. They're there for the date. They're there mm-hmm. to hang out, and it's just something you do to get close to your girl or something like that. And, yeah, and they're not really absorbed in watching. When I go to the movie, I don't go to the movie for a date, okay? I go to the movie to see the movie. You know, I'm there to see the film.
We just need more options like that. You
well,
know?
And that's the deal. And is it there has to be a place. Now, I know there's obviously these theaters that you know, you can get dinner in now. You know, the whole mm-hmm. Alamo Draft House situation that's going on. I mean, I love that idea. That's very cool. It's higher end. I would gladly, if someone could tell me, no matter what, you're going to come into this place, you're going to have rockin' sound, your movie is going to be, I mean, the bulb is going to be fully, you know, outputting enough light, it's going to be framed correctly, there's no one's going to talk. If I can be guaranteed of getting that, walking in, I'll pay $15 for a ticket, I'll pay $20 for a ticket for specific films, for that first time viewing, for, mm-hmm. you know, little films here and there, little personal films, I'm not going to pay that much. Matter of fact, I'm not going to see those at all. You know, and that may be one possibility that we can look at. Is there a situation where you could have an extremely high-end theater where they can guarantee you your viewing experience will be better than at home? You know what I mean? We're going to cater to a higher audience. If you're willing to pay the price, and not everyone's going to be willing to pay the price, someone opens their mouth, gone. You know what I mean? You got guys standing in that movie theater. You say something going, remember in the old days when we used to watch movies and we used to put our feet up on the back of the seats?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was you, right? You used to do this to folks.
Oh, no.
When you worked in the movie theaters. But, move your feet, please, sir. You know what I mean?
That flashlight shining.
Yeah. Yep. That doesn't happen today. Those guys will get their asses kicked.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to take that chance today. It's a whole different ballgame. There's no respect. There's no respect, and I think part of that happened from the fact that we have an experience at home where we can pause our TVs, we can go and do our business, come back to our movie, and all that kind of stuff. And I think
we can talk out loud to the movie.
We can
be
talk
as
out loud.
As we want.
My wife can ask questions to me during the movie. Mm-hmm. She thinks it's okay to ask questions, and I say, you know, when Rennie Harlan directed this movie, he didn't intend for you to talk and ask questions. Okay. Even Rennie Harlan. But I think that people have gotten that experience at home and then they take it to the movie theater. Would we ever think of standing up and talking or talking on our cell phones during a play or at a Broadway show? Just try it. You're out. People will pick you up by the scruff of the neck and carry you out of there. You know what I mean? It's just not going to happen. And somewhere along the line, that has been dissolved and it's gone now. And to me, that's number one most irritating thing. Because if I go to the movie theaters, I know I'm paying the price. If I want a soda, I know I'm paying the price. I have control over those two. I don't have control over if someone's going to be yapping the whole time. I really don't. And that's just something to me that's not worth it almost.
You know, I did grow up going to plays. You know, I was very accustomed to being quiet and just paying attention
right.
to what was going on.
Right.
So in that regard, I didn't need to communicate with the person to the left or right of me at any time during the movie or during the play.
Right.
Now, as soon as the lights came up and there was a break, I was all ready to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
but not during the experience. But not everybody watches movies or watches plays, for that matter, that way.
And that is diminished the theater-going experience. And so, really, it doesn't offer a lot. But I want to shift it here, okay? Because if the theater is truly on the out, you know what I mean? And we're talking about a paradigm shift here. We're talking about things going differently. I mean, things are already starting to happen. I want to read you these little pieces of an article I pulled out. There's an article that came out called Studios Stumble Through a Tough Year. And part of the thing they're talking about is the change that's going on and people who've made a difference in the industry. And they broke it down into certain people. They talked about Steve Jobs and Bob Iger here. And, you know, Steve Jobs, of course, is the dude who created the Apple and who owns Apple right now. And Bob Iger, who is the new head of Disney. But listen to this. After years of anticipating the digital future, it finally arrived. In October, Jobs, Apple, and Iger's Disney threw open the digital distribution portal with day-after downloads via iTunes of such primetime programs as ABC's Desperate Housewives and Lost. Instant success of the radical move had a domino effect as other companies jumped on the download bandwagon. Newly installed Disney CEO Iger has emerged as a studio leader most likely to lead the charge into the radical revolution that will continue to rock Hollywood during the next decade. The video iPod and iTunes are the first vital link in a new distribution paradigm that will lead to the inevitable next step, higher quality movie downloads.
When we know it's coming, it's just a matter of when technology can catch up to where it's affordable enough and high speed enough to make it practical. It's just not there yet. It's close.
And that's the deal. If it's going to get to the point, and this is the first baby step towards that future, and we've talked about it before, and we could do a whole show on what the future of the movies is going to be, but we know that, you know, in the future, there's one black box in your living room that's, you know, got, you know, 10 terabytes worth of space on it, where you're going to keep your movies, your music, your books. Every source of media that you own is going to go through that one box. And it won't be that you know, unless you want to make a backup, it won't be that you will tangibly own a copy of a film in the future. It'll just be on your hard drive. Right. You know what I mean? Everyone having iPods is the beginning of that too. You know what I mean? I mean, people are not buying CDs anymore. They're downloading, you know, millions and millions of downloads from iTunes and other places. That's really the future of the movies too, because if it happened with music, it's gonna happen with movies. They already have it to, you know, the baby steps of that on the internet as well, on certain websites where you can do a download rental. You know, and it expires after a couple days or something. The hard part is going to be Hollywood protecting itself, because that's always their big fear, is if we put it on the internet, you know, someone will be able to hijack it and copy it for, you know, pennies, and they're going to want to charge, you know, $15 or whatever for these movie downloads. Now, it's encouraging to know that you can go to iTunes and download, you know, single episodes for $2 a piece. I mean, I guess if you look at a whole season of something and you want to download, maybe you're playing, you know, a little bit close to what the DVD set is. But, you know, if I'm going to watch a show, because I know they have Battlestar Galactica on there, I want to watch it on the TV. I don't want to watch it on my iPod, not for the first time. If it's a fun thing and I want to go say, hey, check it out, man, you know, I got BSG on my iPod. I mean, that's kind of a cool little thing to show somebody, but do you really want to watch full episodes of that show for your first time viewing on the little iPod? I wouldn't. I'm still going to want to buy my DVD sets.
It's really ideal for music videos and commercials.
Perfect.
With music in it.
And movie,
you know,
trailers.
Just quick short films, trailers. Just
little skits from Saturday Night Live, stuff like that. Perfect.
Right.
Perfect.
I mean, again, their market is a lot of kids riding a bus to school.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that, you know, can probably pass 30 minutes while they're waiting to go to school in the morning or, you know, in between on a lunch break or whatever. This is the new high-tech gadget toy. For us, it was the Mattel Electronics handheld football game or baseball,
man,
or all that. You know,
basketball.
I mean, that was
the
high-tech gadget to take to school in its day. I mean, the Walkman was when it finally became, you know, practical. I mean, before then, we just had big clunky cassettes, you know.
Yep.
That you could, you know, record and play on with that one speaker.
It was awesome, huh?
But, I mean,
awesome.
What an age to be living in for high-tech toys. And they're only getting better and smaller. And that one black box you mentioned, yeah, you'll just plug your little portable phone / MP3 / movie player / mini computer. You
well,
know?
Check this out. What's going on with the whole Sony PSP? You know what I mean? Who could have predicted that these UMD discs would go through the roof like they are? They're selling big. You go to Best Buy, and there's a massive section now where you can buy the little discs with movies on them. You know, and I have a Sony PSP, and I enjoy it. But I've only bought like two movies on there. I bought Kill Bill and Terminator 2, just kind of as a novelty thing. Hey, check it out. Movies on a little handheld thing, and it looks really good. But, you know, I am not going to buy a movie on that little disc, you know what I mean, for my copy of that movie. I'm going to buy the disc. I can put on my TV, you know, because there's no output to the – there's no TV out on the PSP, not yet at least. Okay.
Well, and I think that attests to the success of it is again, these are just, it's content, almost disposable content. Oh, it's just another movie, something to watch on my PSP. What movie is it? I don't know. It had some action in it. It was cool. You know, it's just more of just flowing through, content flowing through.
But how, and, what a wonderful gift for Hollywood to be able to get that. You know what I mean? But it, again, it shows you how the paradigm is shifting because it's portable. You know what I mean? It's like people want to say, I want to take this thing and make it smaller and smaller and smaller.
Now we're taking our movies with us on the
road. Right, exactly. You can you can pack in my bag that I take my PSP with. You know, I've got those couple movies in there and a few games. You know what I mean? But if I had, I would have perfectly enough room if I had 20 PSP discs that I could take my movies with me. But, I mean, come on. How often do you really watch a movie again and again and again? You know? I mean, if you watch a movie more than once a year, I mean, you really love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen very often.
Well, it also depends on how much time you have to kill to watch movies. Again, you know, a teenager's lifestyle and the time they have to spend it doing it is going to be very different than, you know, you can't really compare yourself in that, that kind of market.
But anyways, so, obviously, that's the future where we're looking at is this downloads things. And the little blip that I read to you was that it's showing you where we're headed, and that is definitely another huge part of the death of the theatrical experience. Now, here's another one. Mark Cuban and Todd Wagner, okay? These guys, well, here, let me just read what it has here. The rebel moguls behind 2929 Entertainment enlisted Steven Soderbergh in their cause to show the slow-moving studios what the new distribution paradigm might look like. This January, they will put their radical notions to the test when they launch Soderbergh's mini-budgeted digital mystery, Bubble, day and date on their landmark theater screens with the with new DVD label and their cable channel, HDNet. So, same day, you're going to go. You can see Bubble in the theater, you can see Bubble on DVD, or you can see it on cable. Which way are you going to go?
Well, I think two of them make a lot of sense. The theatrical seems like the only one that would be without digital projection might be cost prohibitive today.
Right.
With digital projection, what the hell? You know, it might only play 3 days at that theater, but they can just pipe it in, and people that want to go out to the theater, you know, that might keep only people with proper etiquette going to the movies.
Yeah.
If it's all day and date at the same time, because everybody else will just stay home and watch it because it'll be cheaper.
So, you know, and you know, they're hyping this thing and saying that this is a test. It's not a test. You want to test something? Put King Kong out on DVD the same day that you release in the theater. You know, then you're going to get a real test. No one's going to go see Bubble. You'll see it because you love Soderbergh. And people who are in the know who love Soderbergh will see it. You know, what are your plans? I know, because I know you're going to want to see it.
It really depends on the theater it's playing in. If it's playing in a theater that has uncomfortable chairs and it's not premium screening, I'm taking home the DVD.
Right. Or if it's not, or if it's across the city or something like that. Right. It's about convenience.
Right. Yeah, because really, I want to. My impulse is I want to see it right away. I want to see the new Soderbergh.
Right.
So if I get a, it's really whoever I run into first. If I run into the DVD first, there's a good chance I'm going to rent it and watch it.
Right. So that's the deal. And, you know, to me, you know, this is one of his smaller films that a lot of people, you know, aren't going to know about that will just go unnoticed. Not that it won't have a life on video, you know what I mean? But, I mean, maybe they're right with that type of a film. I mean, I can't imagine the budget was very big on this film. You know what I mean? Because he likes to go in there and do his little small films. And that's awesome. I love it. But, you know, this is the perfect kind of film to do that on. You know, don't do it for King Kong and big movies. Don't do it for, you know, War of the Worlds. Let that go out and sit in those theaters for 8 months and let, you know, and when nothing else is in the theater, people say, oh, well, you know, we probably should go see King Kong now. You know, there's nothing else we want to see. We'd like to go to the movies. Oh, we can go see King Kong. You know, they can't do it now these days because, you know, after 3 months, it's out and they don't get a chance to see it, you know. And, you know, then they're waiting for DVD. So, I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting experiment. But do you remember back, what was the name of that movie, Human Film Database, man, that Sting was in with the lady who played Jessica Rabbit? And it was shot on video.
Oh, the Kathleen Turner one in 93?
Yes, what was that? Something and something.
Yeah, Julie and Julia.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Remember, that was a test movie, and it was like, ooh, this is shot on video. This is a test market. We're going to start shooting movies on video, and there was all this talk and yada yada. And it really meant nothing because it was such an early attempt. And, you know, and I didn't see it. I don't care. But, you know, obviously until Lucas, you know, revved it all up with episode two, did it really make that shift to shooting in digital video?
Not for feature films. A lot of television, though, started shooting and using that sort of film-like filter.
Right.
And well, up sure. until well, know, sure. Lucas's cameras in the 2000s, that became sort of the predominant television look whenever you couldn't afford to shoot on film.
Right. But that was a silly experiment probably to get attention, to get people into the theater. And
a movie they probably weren't going to see otherwise.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that could be the very same case with Bubble. They're thinking of another way to get media hype where no media hype would come. And I'm not knocking Soderbergh at all. Because, you know, I respect the hell out of the guy. But I think that maybe you're going to get a lot of media attention for them saying, hey, we're doing it all on the same date. And so people who might not see it just to join in the experiment might go see it otherwise.
Well, in 10 years, when we're getting all our content that way, people will go look back and say, yeah, and Bubble was the first one to do it.
Right.
Day and date in every format that was available at the time.
Right.
You know, they covered theatrical, they covered cable, they covered DVD.
It's all coming together. Hollywood has a new paradigm, at least some of these indie people do. Now, whether they're using it for their own promotion or they're really interested in changing things and they're having the guts to do it. See, ultimately, back to Apocalypse Hollywood, Hollywood will not change out of fear.
Well, and it's always down to fear. And you brought up Kingdom of Heaven earlier. And it's important to note that Fox dumped the director's cut to one theater in Los Angeles for a week. It's been playing for 2 weeks. And it's almost got 50 minutes of footage put back into it.
That can make a whole different movie.
And it's being, you know, reviewed as a whole different movie.
Right.
And everyone's asking themselves, what was the point of butchering it up and putting it out? Because, you know, now they're coming and didn't do that well domestic anyway. What, 40 or 50 million, maybe 40-something? Right. And it's like, if you had to put out the longer version, you would at least put out the better version of the film that probably would have grossed the same amount anyway.
Yeah.
In the long run, was the general thinking. But with Kong, you know, there's a big argument saying, oh, it's too long. You know, the first hour of the film, it takes too long to get going. But if Peter Jackson, would have cut it down, people would have complained that, oh, it's just all action. There's no character development. There's no, you know, anything else. So it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
And this needs to stop. You know, whatever the director says goes, okay? That's the film, like it or not. And I think that where we're getting thrown off here is the fact that, like you said about Kingdom of Heaven, is that it was released as that version. So now what, we can expect that the movie, the theatrical release is not the real version of movies now?
Well, you know, now you're asking me not to go see it because I get one shot at a movie.
Ridley blew it because he told people, oh, by the way, what you're seeing is not the real movie.
Right.
The real movie will come out, you know, 8 months from now in an extended edition with an hour left, you know? And it's like, are you kidding me? Well, then I'm not going to spend my money and waste my first time view going to see your half movie. I want to see the real vision of this film. And I'm glad that Jackson, you know, this whole fear of length, I'm not down with it, okay? If a movie is 10 hours, you either go or you don't go. But don't bitch about it. If you don't want to see it, stay home. If 3 hours scares the hell out of you, stay home.
Right. And you know what I mean? People are, actually. I think
watch Will and Grace. Watch Will and Grace. You know, watch a 30-minute show, whatever, if length is killing you to death. You know what I mean? Or wait for the DVD, and after an hour, turn it off. You know, we did that with Lord of the Rings. You can't watch Lord of the Rings, you know, all three films all in one sitting.
It beats you down. You're tired.
It's just too much. You know what I mean? You can if you want to, but you're a geek if you do. You know, this fear of length is, you know, and I think that's killing Hollywood, because if we're spending the money to put a vision out, how much did Kingdom of Heaven cost? $140 million?
Right. I mean, they took the time to write the script. The studio approved the script. They budgeted the script. Scott went out and shot it. They went and cut it together. They scored it. They screened it. And then they just butchered it up and threw it out there, hoping to grab whatever buck they could. It's like they completely forgot why they made the movie in the first place. Well, or did they? Was it just made because they thought that they might have another Gladiator, a quick moneymaker on their hands with possible Oscar, you know, prestige at the end of the year?
Or, I
mean, after thinking, what's the thinking behind it?
Well, or, and here's another big question for you, is it a money-making tactic? Flashback to DVD ripoff, okay? Is there a market for putting out the theatrical once and then jacking us part two for the extended director's cut? Because you know it's happening like crazy now. You know what I mean? Could it be that when they release theatrical, they're already thinking DVD? You know, and they're saying, you know, let's hold off. Hold off on that, Ridley. Hold off on that, because we'll put out this theatrical, but it won't be the only one. We're going to let you go back and do a, you know, and what director wouldn't want to do that? What director wouldn't want to make a cover their film like Peter Jackson got to do for the Lord of the Rings disc with just, we're going to give you 3 discs. We're going to give you 4 discs, whatever you want, Ridley. We're going to let you have all these extras. You can do all these commentaries and all that kind of stuff. We're going to let you make the definitive edition. What is he going to say? Nah, no thanks. He's going to say, sure.
This is from a man who's gone back and done that with a majority of his films anyway.
Right.
Recut them to have a definitive edition.
Right.
You know, most recently Gladiator being the extended cut on that.
Right.
And, I mean, so of course he's going to embrace that. I think that's why he probably let the theatrical cut go without too much of a fight, because he knew the real life of this movie is going to be this extended cut when he finally puts out that. That's going to be the DVD people have in 10 years
right.
when they refer to Kingdom of Heaven. And I think a lot of directors today are wising up to that type of thinking. I mean, it's not anymore where your film is going to play 8 months, 10 months in the theater if it's a blockbuster.
Right.
You know, they know the theatrical window has shrunk.
But see, as a film connoisseur, why am I going to go and see it in the theater? If they're championing the theater and they're going to put out, you know, not the real version in the theater for a quick turnover, why am I going to bother with that? Why am I going to go spend my money in the theater and buy the DVD? I'm going to wait. You know what I mean? Now, maybe they can trick us and just not tell us that it's coming. Maybe they can pull a daredevil on us. Right. You know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, that's theater ripoff. You know what I mean? That's a whole other show, theater ripoff. If that's going to be a deal where there's that we're not sure that we're getting the definitive director's cut, is it, why does there got to be more editions of a movie? Why can't there just be, here's the movie?
Well, especially when movies only new once, you know?
Right.
And you want to get that experience. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's different about the uncorked edition of Wedding Crashers versus the
right.
theatrical one, you
right.
know?
Right.
I mean, what we'll have to see, you know, was it worth cutting that material or not, or did it really matter, you know?
Well, it's the fact that they're saying, you saw it in the theaters, but that wasn't good enough. Because now, if you watch the DVD, you're going to get more. So it's a way of saying more. More is hot right now. You know what I mean?
But they're not saying it wasn't not good enough. We're just saying, here's the version we put out in theaters, but guess what? If you thought you liked that version, we've got one with 17 extra minutes in it, and it's
right.
unrated.
Right.
You got to check this out if you're a fan of the movie, because they've already hooked you in as a fan in the theater.
DVD
so now
rip-off.
They're looking at this as the big bow on top. Mm-hmm. They're serving it up for you in a platter. But at least they're doing it the same day it comes out, the first time.
Right.
You're not waiting for this Wedding Crashers. They know now that they're going to put it out right off the bat.
Well, no. What about the Dumb and Dumber edition that just came out with the unrated edition? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. They're dipping in those old coffins. Get some money out of that franchise.
That's the smart way to do it. Do it like Pretty Woman. Space it out every few years and add more features. You know what I mean? Jack people again and again and again and again. We're back to DVD ripoff. But I think it's indicative of what Hollywood's doing, is that in their plight to squeeze every single inch of dollar out of their previously made properties and even films in the theater, like they did with A Kingdom of Heaven, is that you're seeing, it's just they're scourging us again and again and again. They're not just saying, well, here's a film we have for you. You know, it's good entertainment. It's honest entertainment for an honest dollar. It's not that anymore. It's come see this. We can't promise you it's the last edition and all that. But it just goes, again, why in the hell am I going to go to the theater when all these things are jacked up against me? You go ahead and do the pros and the con list. Theater?
Well, you win
DVD.
No matter what as a consumer because you get that extended version with all those extra goodies, and that's ultimately what we've always wanted.
Right.
You know, I mean, when we had the you know, the theatrical cut of Highlander, we always wanted the European cut with the extra footage, you know.
Right.
Well, now we have it.
There can be only one.
You know?
Oh, no. For the consumer,
we win as consumers.
For the consumer, more is better. Okay, mm-hmm. It's up to everyone if they want to decide that they want to spend the extra money on that particular film. You know, if they've already previously purchased it. If you haven't purchased it before, and here comes the uncut edition, director's edition with 15 extra minutes, it's good to go for you. You don't even know the difference.
And I can see the sales pitch on this. You know, it's like, oh no, we don't want to give them the full version in the theater. You know, because that will be the incentive for them to want to buy the DVD because
exactly.
They already like the film. It's already like the 40-year-old virgin. Did they have like a, you know, an extended unrated cut of that one?
Yeah, they did. And I
so
didn't see.
If you're
I didn't...
a fan, if you're a fan of that movie in the theater,
right?
Which one are you going to grab the day it comes out? You're going to want to get that because if you're already a fan, you want all the extra stuff.
The whole deal is that more is better. I didn't see the movie theatrical. I saw it DVD. Loved it. Awesome movie, by the way. But I didn't know the difference. But if I have a choice, theatrical or the uncut extra with 17 moments, which way am I going to go? Give me a break. It's like we talked about before. On your Abyss DVD, you're going to watch the theatrical? Never. On your Aliens DVD, you're going to watch the theatrical? Never. You know what I mean? More is better. It doesn't necessarily mean it's better for the film. It doesn't necessarily, it does with The Abyss. It doesn't necessarily, and Aliens, but not always does it always mean that that film is better because there's more in it. Because there could be a reason that they cut those things out on purpose.
Well, generally, comedies have proven they do play better somewhere between the 90 and 100-minute range versus 120 minutes and 125, you know?
Well, 40-year-old Virgin is long.
A great
it's like
comedian,
over 2 hours.
I mean, a great comedian on stage wants to leave people wanting more and want them laughing, you
right,
know?
Right.
You'd never want to wear out your welcome as a funny man and as a funny movie. So I completely see the discipline of storytelling there. I mean, I think of Howard Stern's Private Parts, you know. It's very tight at around 100 or so minutes or whatnot. And it could have been a lot longer because there's a lot more episodes of his life they could have covered.
Right.
But the movie leaves you wanting more.
Right.
And that's, you know, I think part of its enduring quality.
Well, and that's definitely a good thing. And I think that we're taught to want more. We're taught to need more. And they're giving it to us. But what really is what they're doing is they're robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know what I mean? They're killing the theatrical to make their money on DVD. And back and forth. This is their own fault. So when I hear them whining and moaning, saying, oh, no one's going to the movies anymore, it's your fault. You know, and there's a myriad of reasons. You know, the DVD release window being a huge one. But at the same time, the stuff that we just talked about doesn't bode well for the consumer, where you say, well, I'm not going to go see Ridley Scott's half-assed version,
right.
You know? I mean, he made the mistake of telling us, you know what I mean? Because if it's a Ridley Scott, you know, it's usually something that I get to the theater right away to, but I'm not going to go see this version and have my first experience of it ruined. I'm going to wait. You know what I mean?
You're going to get the full one when it hits DVD.
So in that aspect, they're really for their DVD sales, of course, because, you know, hey, at the very least, we're paying $15 a ticket instead of $8 a ticket. You know what I mean? To own the disc instead of to just, you know, go one time. But I don't know. It is truly as if the theatrical experience exists as a warm-up for owning on home video. And that may be the future of...
Well, it is eventually. Like, you know, eventually... You know, I mean, we've seen an interesting... you know, trend in the internet. If you think about it, you know, it started out with Ma and Pa stores, you know, the old West town, you know, the general store that's been there for 50 years that becomes the department stores. But all of those got moved out when all the Walmarts came into town.
Right.
You know, and why? Cheaper prices. People always are going to go for the cheaper prices.
Sure.
And now you hear all the Walmarts complaining and they're screaming for internet tax because why? the internet, people are now buying more on the internet. This Christmas, more people shopped on the internet than ever before.
Right.
And it's only getting started.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not like the internet age is coming. We're in it.
Oh, yeah, it's here.
We are riding the wave, and believe me, it hasn't even gotten started.
Well, the internet has changed the entire world as we know it. I mean, absolutely, and you're absolutely right. The whole point is
now we're going to shut down the Walmarts eventually.
Well, it's
eventually about people are going to stop wanting to go hassle the stores.
Well, it's
and
about
they'll just get it quicker online.
Convenience, speed, no hassle. That's the deal. The sad part is that it's made us to where, you know, we don't communicate with anybody anymore. You know what I mean? If we have it all, we'll all be locked in our house. Trucks will deliver our food. Our movies will come in, and our entertainment will come in over the net. You know, and you'll never have to go look at another human face in your entire life. You know what I mean?
So you know what happens, though? As soon as we get to something even, you know, 50% of what you're talking about, that's the time you open up a revival movie theater house.
Yeah.
That's the time when you start bringing back really good movie theater popcorn and a balcony and a great sound system and a really eclectic selection of films that you can see on a big screen, and it becomes an experience again that you want to get out of the house to have.
Right.
So we need to get everybody in for a while to get them to want to go back out again. I mean, that's just cycles, how things work.
If there is a future for theatrical, who's going to save it? I mean, is James Cameron the only man right now? Is he the man that's going to save the theatrical experience?
His 3D movie is going to put a lot of butts into chairs. That's probably,
you know,
for sure.
I mean, ever since, I mean, Titanic came out, what, 98?
97.
97?
Yeah.
Okay. And since then, he's made, like, what, two or three 3D shorts that were IMAX, okay? And now he's prepping this Battle Angel movie, 3D. You have to go to the theater to see this film. When you want to see the Terminator 2 ride at Universal Studios, you got to go to Orlando, you got to go to Los Angeles. All if right. you want to ride the Spider-Man ride that's incredible and in Orlando and at Universal Studios, you have to go there. That is the future of movies. They has to be something that you cannot get in your home. Maybe eventually one day when we all have freaking holodecks like on Star Trek, you know, that won't matter. You know, you'll never have to leave your house.
Well,
that's
once
for sure.
The VR helmet becomes a reality. I mean,
right.
IMAX, Polar Express, 3D.
You know, right.
That's
right.
A reason to go to movies, right?
That's the reason
you're
I didn't buy
that anywhere else.
I loved Polar Express, and we saw it last year on a 3D IMAX. And we didn't get to make it. We wanted to make it this year, but we didn't make it. But I've told my family, even though we loved it, we're not buying this on DVD because there's a special place for this. We'll make it a tradition. You know, it's more. There's something more to that than just watching it at home on, you know, flippantly and turning it off and forgetting mm-hmm. about it. You know what I mean? I mean, that's another thing we could talk an hour about is the respect for films and how they're handled. Not just respect for the theatrical experience, but respect for films. And you've talked about this before, the fast food culture. It's just consume and move, consume and move, consume and move. You know, and that's why we get movies like Fantastic Four and all the other McMovies.
And as long as some people are happy with it and the numbers are good, what the hell, right? I mean, that seems to be the attitude.
Well, and then you get the people who... And, of course, this is my biggest pet peeve in the movie theaters at all is, you know, you can tell when that ending's coming, and there are those people getting up and walking out.
Yeah.
It's like, God, I mean, I want to puke when I see that because it's like, where are you going? Where do you need to go? Now, maybe you hated this movie so bad that you needed to get out fast. Okay, fine, but just leave then. You know what I mean?
And then they start showing extra scenes, and then they got to stand there and go, oh, wait a second. Now, do I want to go back into my chair, or do I want to just stand here? Maybe they won't
exactly.
last too long. Wait a second. They are lasting long. I better go sit down.
Well, how about in Narnia? You know, at Narnia, we get credits, and half the theater's, you know, walking out, and then, whoops, there's all this other new stuff, and everyone's
right.
standing watching this stuff. You know, and this is what I've said, and maybe I've said it before on the Saloon, and I'll repeat it, but forgive me if I've said it before, but, you know, when I take Wesley, my 9-year-old, to movies, he is not allowed to get up and jump off and start leaving. You sit down and you have respect for this.
Well, if anything, just take a breather. Take in what you saw. This is the time to break into conversation. Talk over the credits.
Right.
You know, listen to the music. You know, you know, hear the last song on the album, kind of thing.
Right. Where are you going? Where are you running? All right. Here's the new rule.
That's why they put that Celine Dion song on Titanic. You know.
Exactly.
They want you to stay and listen to it.
All right. Here's the new deal. Here's the new deal. If you listen to the Hollywood Saloon, you sit for those credits. If you don't, you're banned from the Hollywood Saloon. Unsubscribe from iTunes.
Hey, what if you got to go to the bathroom? I've had that before.
No, no, going to the bathroom is a different story. That's fine. Okay, you got to go.
After King Kong, you really got to go.
Yeah, you do. If you got to go, you got to go. Okay, you don't need to pee in a cup. Okay, you got to go, you got to go. That's the new rule. Listen to the Hollywood Saloon, you sit for the credits. At least, you know, 5 minutes, you know? Just sit there and let some names roll past. Show some respect.
I love it when they have extra scenes. I think that's the perfect place to do it. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
If it keeps people in theaters even better. I like the bonus scene after the credits are done and they have the extra little bit.
Well, you know what? I guess if the movie is a raging piece of crap, you can leave. I know that when I saw Constantine in the theater, I really wanted to go.
Uh-huh.
Okay, as soon as those credits started, I was like, oh, man, I need to hit the door. But yeah, anyways, we got off on that. But bringing it all back, you know, and pointing it towards Hollywood and seeing that they are creating these problems for themselves. It's their own apocalypse that they're creating. They're going, do we support theatrical? Do we support DVD? What do we support? They're going back and forth on both, but they're bitching about it when they're hurting one side of their industry. The point is they're making money on theatrical and DVD. Give me a break. You know, are they basically doubling or tripling their theatrical money on DVD? You know that most of the people that go see Star Wars are going to pick up the DVD, especially if it's cheap. Why not? You know what I mean? Why not have the Star Wars collection? It's like, you know, having a dictionary around the house. You know what I mean? People just own it. And I think
and you want to talk something else is what have they been pushing so hard on us for the last 5 years on DVD? TV shows on DVD.
Right.
They've got entire rows now dedicated to us going and finding these old TV shows we like so much, and we're buying them up.
Absolutely.
Two or three sets at a time.
Sure.
When are we supposed to watch them? You know how long it takes to watch an entire show? Of course we're not going to the movies. We're too busy catching up on our TV shows. I mean, it commands an extraordinary amount of time to go through an entire series.
Right.
And if you're getting two or three at the same time, you know, it's like, God. And then you try and juggle that with all the new releases that are coming out on DVD of all the movies you didn't go see in the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of entertainment to watch.
Right.
And then you combine that with all the new TV shows you have to keep up with. And then any book that you have to read or video games to play. I mean,
you got a lot of media to deal with.
There's so many more distractions now than ever before.
Right.
But yeah, of course they're staying away from the theater. Who wants to bother with it?
Sure, sure. And I think that's the real thing about Apocalypse Hollywood. And when we talk about 2005 in particular, is that they have focused so much on this whole theatrical thing and this and the way that the media has exploited it, that it's just made this – it's like a clanging gong just – you know, over and over, they're telling us to please listen to our poor plight. Please go to the movie theaters. We're starving in the street. Go and give Narnia a nickel. You know what I mean? Go up and give, you know, Batman Begins a buck. You know what I mean? Come on. Give us a break.
If we take away theatrical, does that mean we can't talk about box office numbers anymore? Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, then it'll just be DVD sales. They already do DVD sales. Guess who's got the most DVD sales this week? Guess who's got the most, you know, rentals this week? But the point is that no one listens to that. You know what I mean? But it's still money in their hand. And if the point is if you take a movie like Serenity that made half of its budget back, I guarantee you it's going to make its budget back and more. You know what I mean? And then those same people are going to go out and buy the Firefly set also. You know, it's going to make its money back. And very rarely these days does a movie come out and flop so hard that it's unable to recoup its investment.
It all goes back to that Rupert Murdoch quote from the David Fincher episode.
Hmm.
You know, he doesn't own a movie studio because he likes movies. It's an asset. Movies are an asset. Is this a good asset or is it a bad asset?
Right.
And every movie is judged like that. Was Serenity a good asset? It looked like a good bet on paper. Mm-hmm. Sure. And in the money they spent on it, it was a safe bet. And yeah, eventually it's going to turn a modest profit.
Right.
Rocky VI. How does that look as a bet? You know, as a $65 million film, that doesn't look too good as a bet.
Right.
But to make it as an $18 or $20 million film, that's a good bet.
Huge bet.
I think that's a good, you know, investment right there.
Well, you know what? Here's the way the investment game should work. They're all looking for the big, giant dollars, and they're shooting, they're going for the fences every time. You know, I'm going for the gold, I'm going for the gold. But look at Clooney's movie, Good Night, Good Luck. How much did that cost? $7 million?
Mm-hmm.
It's already made 20, and it's on limited release.
Mm-hmm.
That's a massive profit. That's three times the profit. You see,
and it's going to do well on DVD.
And it's going to do well.
It's going to play in every classroom.
Exactly.
Hopefully, you know.
And so
that wants to study that period.
And to me, that's real success. If you want to look at a list, you know, Box Office Mojo should have a list of the biggest money making movies of all time as production cost compared to box office. You know, when you see movies like Blair Witch, when you see movies like My Big Fat Greek Wedding,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Low cost, high yield. Now, again, we can't expect every movie to do that, but you sure have a better possibility of making a profit when you shoot for $7 million than you shoot for $150 million. Now, granted, on $7 million, you're not going to make King Kong.
Well, sure.
And, it's not going to happen.
Again, you bring up good examples. There's always room for a good runaway movie that people just want to go see because it's the thing.
Right.
It's out there. It's the little cult thing, you know, the cultural phenomena we got to go check out,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always going to be room for a film like that to have some theatrical legs where other films that you think would have a strong theatrical will not, you know.
Right.
I do think people want to go to the movies. They just can't go as much as they used to.
Sure.
And they're going to be very selective. Now, to me, King Kong is everything you'd want to go see a big screen popcorn movie for. It's not for the Syriana audience in the same way. It's not going to stimulate them in the same way.
Right.
You know, but it's certainly for the Jurassic Park audience.
Well, and I just think that, you know, looking at the whole year and capping off the year with that kind of stupidity just threw a whole veil over the entire year.
They've been gunning all year long. I mean, now that, you know, entertainment reporting is such a, we have to, you know, fill in these beats four or five times a day, you know, mm-hmm, with updates mm-hmm. and news. They've been tracking every single week. Oh, this weekend was 8% down from this time last year. It didn't matter what movies it came out. They're just tracking weekend by weekend, year by year.
Right.
I mean, you're just asking to shoot yourself in the foot, in the head, the mm-hmm. heart, everywhere on down the line. Where does this end? This kind of reporting and fascination and obsession over these type of details. I mean, you can't stack films up like that.
Right.
I mean, yeah, of course, The Passion blew everything out of the water. So, of course, you know, we're down from that weekend a year later.
Right.
You know, because there was Hitch couldn't keep up with those kind of numbers, you know.
Right.
Or whatever came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's this film as a contest, I don't see how it can end well for any of the studios. They need to play the game of chess and realize that the move at the end is they're going to get checkmated. They all are, you know. They need to get smarter on how they're looking at this and how they're handling it. I mean, the rule of the game today in today's media culture is you have to get ahead of the story. You don't want the story ahead of you. And they have to control it. And if the box office reporting is out of control and the focus is off the movies, they need to pull it back. I mean, we're just repeating ourselves, but, you know, it all comes back to that.
No, that's
it. I mean, we can talk about all this thing and rant all we want, but unless we can actually offer something constructive about what could be done, and really we won't know unless an experiment like that was put into place, but would our lives be so horrible if we didn't know what the top grosses for the weekend were?
Mm-hmm, right.
I mean, can we all just, we would all get on with our lives. Eventually, after 6 months, do you think we'd even care?
Yeah. Well, and I think you nailed it. I mean, and if you want to know what to do, go back and listen to Apocalypse Hollywood 1 or episode 3. Because I think he nailed it there. You know what I mean? With the whole, you know, let's stop reporting grosses. You know, I mean that's just a killer one. That one, along with, you know, the rental window, is just massive. And this game that they're doing, and they're just generating bad press for themselves by allowing this to happen. And, you know, if anything, we've learned that, you know, people never, ever, ever want to create bad press for themselves.
Yet, well, see, and Hollywood's a hateful town in some ways. They want to see other people fail, you know? Mm-hmm. They don't want to bask in other people's success. They want their own success, you know? So Kong Bomb is gossip for the week, you know?
Right.
And that keeps all the things going, but that kind of energy is not going to help out anybody.
Right.
There is room for all the studios to have success every single weekend of the year with movies.
Yeah.
Because there are people willing to go to the movies every single weekend. Not all of us, but there are people that will, you know? Yeah. So just the fact that you know you have an audience that will come to the well no matter what kind of water you put into it,
mm-hmm.
I think gives them a lot more flexibility on what they could be programming than they're willing to take.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're scared. They're just playing it safe. And that's why they're not getting in all the other peripheral people they normally would in some of the choices in programming. Yeah, I look up at the billboard, or, you know, I look at all the posters, and I've seen 60% of the movies that are now playing because they're all remakes. I remember the originals when they came out, you know? And so I'm now in an age where there's only 40% original movies that I haven't already seen. I mean, it's you know, is it fair to lump King Kong into that? Well, yeah. I saw it in 76, and I've seen the original.
Right.
You know, the story is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it on an unprecedented scale? Absolutely it is, but it's the same movie.
But like I said, the story here isn't really the film. It's the fact that we saw those words, Kong Bomb,
Kong Bomb,
across news reports. And millions of people go to the Drudge Report. They go to Yahoo News. I get my news on the internet. And that's what they saw. And then ideas were made. So the culprit here and the enemy of Apocalypse Hollywood 2, 2005 meltdown, is going to be media. But yeah, it's pathetic.
But we're not getting good reporting. And we are also getting opinion makers that do not know Hollywood, that do not know the numbers. I mean, if I want something that, you know, is well reported, I'll go to Movie City News and I'll read David Poland and I'll take a look at, you know, Leonard Clady and his box office charts, because those guys seem to want to double check their work before they put it up on their site, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, Poland has written some just magnificent articles all year long about the fake slump.
Yeah.
You know, and how it just it doesn't really have a lot of accuracy in the true numbers of in the sense of the thing,
right.
And how it's completely being overhyped, and this alarmist state going on in publications of it's almost like this old media getting into the entertainment reporting business.
Yeah, yeah, stay out.
You know, and now they're trying to compete, and this is what they're running with.
Well, and it just all goes to show you, if anything sunk Hollywood this year, it was false reporting more than it was actually the Hollywood numbers. And I think that, you know, that's the hard part, is it's an invisible line. We don't know what is what.
And so what? We didn't break 2004's record. I mean, come on. Yeah. We cannot. Eventually, you're going to take a dip. I mean, the stock market takes dips, right? Everything takes dips. The highest grossing record eventually is going to fall off the charts, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
The most popular car is eventually going to stop selling, or shoes or jeans or anything. So it's false expectation to think that we had to beat every single year. You know, now 2006 is coming up. Are we supposed to beat 2004 this year? Guess what? Ain't going to happen. So buckle up, Hollywood.
they said, we see the uptrend. It's like, what? What are the movies besides Superman Returns is coming out that's just high exposure? I mean, what else?
Oh, I mean, there'll be people going to the movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, if 2005, let's just throw a number out. And this is what they do anyway. They make up numbers, so we'll make up a few.
Yeah.
Let's just say 8% of the audience in 2005 decided, I'm not going to go to the theater this year. I'm going to wait for DVD.
Right.
That number is going to almost double in 2006, or it's going to get to 12%.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that number is going to go up in 2006. It's going to go up in 2007. It's already into play. Stop baiting us with the ultimate home theater experience if you don't want us to stay home and enjoy it. Yeah. Don't give us HD equipment unless you want us to stay home and enjoy your software.
Yeah, don't give us DTS 5.1, 6.1. Stop it.
You know, don't give us blank CDs if you don't want us making copies of music CDs.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, it's we're knowledgeable as consumers. You give it to us, we're going to use it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
So, you know, just you're going to have to be happy. Yeah, you're going to have to be open to new ideas. I would not like to see theatrical go away, but I don't think it'll ever go away. It'll be retro eventually.
You know, and Marty had mentioned this to me. He wrote a really great write-up on you know, what we're talking about now. And he had said, you know, we've seen this lull before. You know what I mean? It happened in the 50s when TV came out and everyone was scared to death. Movies are dead because everyone wants to stay home and watch Ed Sullivan. And then it happened when VHS came out. Oh,
well, what did they do when that happened in the 50s? They came out with Cinescope and widescreen and all of that. And that lured people back in because the image was so big. The future may be this IMAX 3D process you're talking
about.
James
Cameron, baby. That's
you
right.
Know? I mean, Cameron does know that. That's why he's committed to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if that's why, if that's the only type of movies that are playing, then that's what it'll be. But, I mean, everything runs in cycles. And I do think once people stop going to the movies, after a while, if they go back and they enjoy the experience, their habits will change again, you know?
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up this episode of the Hollywood Saloon. As always, I want to invite you guys over to www.hollywoodsaloon.com, our website. Check out what we've got going on there. You can definitely give us an email if you'd like at hollywoodsaloon@yahoo.com. And you can do a few other things. Now, one thing I definitely want to get to is our Frapper map. Now, that's a big thing for us, and we got a lot of people on there. We got 61 people on there now, last I checked. If you join up, we're going to give a shout-out to you on the air. And so I'm going to do that now. Now, I had to miss them on the last episode because we didn't want to put anything at the end of the David Fincher show, which was so long anyways. From where we left off, okay, a friend of mine, Space Casey, who lives in Utah, and I met him over in the Frag Cafe. Want to say hey to Matt in Portland. He dropped in on our map, and he says he's got Leonie Love from Reed College in Portland, Oregon. Want to drop down to Ed Mahoney from Philly, and he says... he's a proud owner of an Amnesiac LLC. Okay, what is that, dude? I don't know what that is. So you have to send me an email and tell me what that is. Because I looked it up. I couldn't find anything. But we got David Friend out in Toronto, Canada. And he also sent me an email and said that he really enjoyed the lockdown episode. So thanks a lot. Thanks for joining the map. Gareth Alexi in Alaska. And, dude, you got to be cold right now. I mean, I looked at you on the map and you're way up there. So... yeah, you are definitely our first person from Alaska, so we love having you on there. And we have Boone in Singapore. He says, love your show. Keep it up. Thanks a lot, Boone. Great to hear from someone basically on the complete other side of the world from us. That blows the mind. So we got William Box in Huntsville, Alabama. Thanks for joining up, William. Jeremy Kirk in St. Louis, and he put his picture on there, and he looks quite the happy dude in his shades and whatnot. So, hey, thanks for joining up, Jeremy. I got AJ... Lysidon or some, I can't pronounce it, so please forgive me if I've murdered your name. It says, I love the show and I hope you do more podcasts. Well, absolutely. We're just going to keep on knocking them out here at the Saloon as fast as we possibly can. We got Jordan in San Diego, California. You know, I got to say California, so sorry, Arnold Love, but welcome, Jordan. Ulf Molmros in Stockholm, Sweden. Man, please forgive me if I messed that up, Ulf, but great to hear from you way over there in Sweden. He wants us to do a show on Back to the Future, or Robert Zemeckis and Tim Burton. And, you know, eventually we will get to all three of those shows, I promise you. When we've been planning for a Back to the Future show, we just haven't gotten to it yet. We want it to be a really definitive and great thing, because John and I are both big fans of Back to the Future. Anyway, continuing, Timothy Matthews from Sydney, Australia. G'day, and he says, great show on Star Wars versus Star Wars, and thank you very much, Timothy. C. Barker, cheers from Naples, Florida, he says, and he's got a great picture of a palm tree on there. And I'm thinking this is Chris. Am I right, Chris? Is that you? Friend of Profane One slash Warren in the forums, and great to hear from you, dude, and hope you enjoy Florida. Big shout-out to Monty, and, you know, Monty is a regular on our forum, a big poster. And he's finally made his way over to our map, so I'm glad you did that, Monty. And he's got a great big old pic of Monty Burns from The Simpsons on there. We got Daniel Mitchell in Edinburgh, Scotland. To you, my friend, I would say, as Mike Myers used to say on Saturday Night Live, if it's not Scottish, it's crap! So, sorry, just had to say that. We got Catherine E. Ruby from Illinois, and she is very cool because she has written and is producing an independent film called Baggage, and we just want to give her the best Hollywood Saloon luck we can with that. You can go over to www.baggagethefilm.com, check it out, see how it's progressing. I know that she's they're casting it. I don't know if she's actually directing it or not. I didn't get that far, but she also said she loved our Fincher Masterclass episode, which is very cool, and she asked us to do a David Mamet episode, and that's a definite. I've already talked to John about it, and it makes total sense. I mean, just go to David Mamet on IMDb, and you just see tons and tons of incredible projects. So, yeah, we'll definitely get to that, but thanks, Catherine, for listening to us. We're honored that the indie film world is out there listening to us, so that's cool, and best of luck with your film. Okay, moving along, I've got Matthias in Valley Village, California, and he said, on lockdown, we failed to mention Rennie Harlan's masterpiece, Ford Fairlane. Oh, how could we miss it? And so we're sorry about that. But it is definitely a masterpiece. Not. Anyways, moving on. Adam Varney in Lexington, Kentucky. I like to say that because the last of the Mohicans. And he said, this is by far my most favorite podcast. Kudos to John and Andy, and keep up the good work. And we really appreciate that. He wrote KUTGW on there, and I was like, what the hell is that? What does that mean? And I had to go look it up on the internet. It shows you how backwards I am. So, but anyways, Adam, thank you. We're honored that you we are your favorite podcast. We'll continue to try to do the best that we can. Big shout out to Marie Go in the Philippines. She says, love the show. Keep up the good work. She also sent us a really great email. She says she found us via our friends over at Nowhere in Mulberry.
Hello.
And that she has downloaded most of our shows, and that's awesome. And so, man, the Nowhere in Mulberry connection is great. www.nowhereinmulberry.com. Love them. And thank you, Marie, for coming and seeing us through them. It's awesome. Also, Bob the Reviewer from Hartford, South Dakota. Now, Bob the Reviewer has got his own podcast called the Podcast Reviewer Podcast, and it's at www.thepodcastreviewer.com. And let me tell you something, I invited him to review our show on his show, and hopefully, you know, that's a good thing, great review, and he will hopefully give us a good review, and you know, his show seems really good, great review, and hopefully he'll give us, you know, some attention, good review, and maybe give us a good review. Okay, so thank you, Bob. Anyways, moving on. Last person is Russell Johnson in Lexington, Kentucky again. He says, great podcast, keep up the good work. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. And so to everyone who's on the Frapper map, thank you. We love seeing you out there. It's growing. It's exciting to see that this little punk-ass show that two guys started 4 months ago has got people all over the globe listen to it. I am humbled, and it is a lot of fun. So thank you, guys. So anyways, again, I know I've talked long, but I can't help myself. Thank you guys for listening, and we shall see you next time. Wait. Did you stick around? See, because, you know, when you stick around to the very end, like I've been talking about, you get something special. Check it out. I want to ask you a quick question to wrap up the show. Top three movies of the year for John Jansen.
Oh, I don't know. There's still some movies I haven't seen.
No. Just
I haven't
the
seen Match Point. I haven't seen New World.
I know, and that's okay.
I haven't seen Munich.
Of what you've seen so far, top three movies of the year.
Oh, I don't know. I thought Batman was really good.
Yeah. All right, I'm going the geek. I'm geeking out. Because you know what? It's never been about what we think is the best. It's about what our favorites is. Number one, Star Wars for me. Duh. Everyone knew that. Number two, Serenity. Number three, Batman.
Okay.
All right. That's no shocker. I'm a geek. I admit it.
I really liked Kiss Kiss Bang Bang this year. I thought Absolutely. That was a lot of fun.
That's on my list of top 10.
You know, I enjoyed King Kong. I don't know if it was like my top three, but
I think
I enjoyed
it up in my about number six position. 40-Year-Old Virgin, which I know you haven't seen yet, is great.
I want to see that.
It's great. Very funny.
You know,
there's some good movies this year.
There were some good movies.
Were some good movies.
Certainly. There's a lot of movies I missed.
There's
plenty.
You
know, The Constant Gardener, I think, is going to be my favorite movie when I see it.
Yeah.
I just got a gut feeling because I like the director's work.
He's awesome.
You know, A History of Violence is going to be a film I like when I see it. So.
Yeah.
You know, I stopped going to the theater also this year. But I think my reasons are different from others. And I think, you know, for other filmmakers out there, something happens when you start working on your own films and your own work. You have less time to go see other people's work.
You know what? I'm not working on any films, and I am more guilty than you of not going to the theaters. Now,
well, you do have something called work.
Yeah.
It's called two kids, and that counts. That's
sure.
Like making two films, Andy. So, you know, I mean... You know, it's still, that's a production that you don't get to finish.
You're always
editing that one and refining and rescoring and repackaging. I mean, you want to talk about your unrated editions. Wait till they're teenagers.
Yeah.
You know? But, my theater attendance has dropped significantly. I mean, I was someone that could easily average 60 to 75 movies a year.
In the theaters. Right.
And when I look over the 90s, you know, it went down to like, you know, 50 and then 45 and then, you know, right down to 22 movies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I think maybe I saw 17, maybe 20, 21.
When I went to one of the movie sites and I looked at all the movies released in 2005 and I looked at all the movies I saw in the theater and in DVD and combined, released in 2005, I only saw 26 movies. I was shocked. I was with you back in college. Remember we had our 1 year where you went 100 and I did like 83 or something. And, you know, we saw everything back then.
It's hard to do. You got to have stamina.
But now when you get older and the theater prices are up and all that kind of stuff, you want a sure thing going in. I know that I'm not going to go see something that I know I'm not going to want to see.
Right.
You know, you can tell ahead of time. That chick flick and me aren't going to hook up.
Whatever.
Okay? It's not going to happen.
No Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants?
Yeah. How about Pass? Okay? Not going. So that's the deal. And I think that, you know, it's... And that's the reason why we don't really have a full list of top 10 best... top 10 worst is because we really can't compare all the movies like we used to when we used to go theatrical. But I guarantee you that some of the reasons that we just talked about played into us not going to the movies so much.
Well, it's really simple to me. It's time. It's cost. You know, it's if it's nighttime and I know it's a difference of paying, you know, $10 versus going to pay a $4 matinee price, I might just say, I'll wait till next weekend and go see it during the day.
Or I'll wait 3 months and see it on DVD.
And then by the next weekend, I've already made plans and I'm off doing something else. You know, I forgot that was when I was going to go see it.
And then it's gone.
It literally is gone. History of Violence happened to me that way.
Yeah.
And it was just gone.
Yeah.
And so if I don't go the first weekend or the second weekend, I usually don't see it.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it's like, you know, I can go out and I can rent, you know, Wedding Crashers, 40-Year Virgin, and mm-hmm. Brothers Grimm in one night and catch up on movies.
Well, I think what we can do for our listeners is, on our forums, we'll do our top 10 best and top 10 worst, if we can even come up with a top 10 worst.
Well, give me a couple of months and let me finish what,
you know. Just what you've seen so far. Just what you've seen so far. That's fine. We'll put it on the
forums.
It
doesn't mean anything, though. How can I? That can't represent 2005 if I didn't see some of those films.
But you can't see anything. You can't see everything. Where's the line that you draw?
The line that I draw would probably be about three or four more movies that I haven't seen. The same way I would have to draw it, having not seen Match Point and New World.
All right.
Because I don't live in New York and L.A. and I couldn't go see those movies in 2005 doesn't make them 2006 movies. They're 2005.
Well, then here's what I'll tell our listeners is I'll tell them, alright, go to our forums and you'll see my top 10 best and worst, but you won't see John's because he's lame.
I'll be lame, but I will make this promise. I will make the list.
He'll be a completist.
When I've seen Constant Gardener and History of Violence.
Yeah.
At least those two.
What about Munich?
I need to see Munich. But I'm planning to go see that in the theater. I don't think I'm going to wait till, what, April 7th to get it on DVD?
Yeah.
Are they going to get the Fear Factor running on Munich and have to get that DVD out by May?
Yeah, it's going to be like, hey, it's John's Top 10 Best and Worst of 2005 in June.
In June. You know, I always thought that the Academy and everybody would do better is to the top 10 movies from January to July, the top 10 movies from July to, you know, December, top 20 of the year.
Yeah.
And make people just lump them in that way, you know?
Yeah, it'd be much more interesting than trying to do the list that they do now. God, let's not get started on lists.
But, you know, I don't, you know, you got, it ends up pigeonholing things. And
But anyways, that was just for fun. I just wanted to show that. So people who are listening, you can go look. You'll eventually see John's, but mine is out there too. And I'll encourage you guys to share on the forums your top 10 best and worst of the year.
So do you change your list when you see Constant Gardener next week if it's one of your favorite movies?
Nah, because what I'll say is this is what I saw in 2005 on video and DVD that was released in 2005. So be it.
So next year, when you make your 2006 list...
I'll just skip it.
Oh, so it can never make a list then?
Never make a list.
You know, it's like an orphan child out there.
Orphan.
That will never have a home on your list, no matter how good it is.
Yeah.
He could have poured his sweat and blood into that movie to make your list. Cronenberg has made one of his best movies so he can get on your list.
Yeah.
And he can't make it now.
As long as I get on Andy's list, I'm good. Well, okay. Well, then maybe I'll put an addendum to the list, and I'll say didn't make.
Hey,
the list.
If they don't make the list, then hey, then there's no argument. You know,
right.
You know,
well, but there's a good chance Constant Gardener could make the list.
I think it's going to make it.
What's his name is smoking.
Fernand Morales.
He rocks. So, anyways, I know we've talked too long, but thank you guys for listening. Apocalypse Hollywood 2. See you next time. Whatever.
You know something, Marge? It's not that tough being a film critic.
You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.